interviewing Jake Wood at his home in Rahway, New Jersey. Today's date is November 5th, 1993. Jake, I understand you were born in Elizabeth. Can you tell me the date?
I was born in Elizabeth, New Jersey, June the 22nd, 1937.
Okay, you grew up there?
I grew up there. I went to school there. Spent the majority of my life in Elizabeth, New Jersey.
Okay, how many brothers and sisters in your family?
I have four sisters. One passed away, and I have three brothers.
Okay, where and when did you start playing ball? Or how, I should say, maybe?
Well, ever since I can, you know, remember being a youth in Elizabeth, I've always wanted to be a baseball player. I remember growing up and, you know, being a Brooklyn Dodger fan. During the years, you know, when they had Pee Wee Reese and Jackie Robinson and Duke Snyder.
Right. Did you get to Ebbets Field ever?
Yes. That was a thrill for us during, you know, like the 40s and, you know, in the 50s, you know, to take a trip, you know, to Ebbets Field to see
right.
the Dodgers play.
Right.
So I grew up, you know, just being a baseball fan.
Right. And so you started playing in the Little League in Elizabeth and the other things as kids grow up?
Yeah, Sandlot, mm-hmm. you know, baseball, you know, where you just get a bunch of guys together in the neighborhood. You
really,
know,
huh?
And chew sides. I think growing up we must have, you know, we've participated in that activity, you know, like almost daily.
Really?
And then, you know, like as we became teenagers and were, you know, was eligible for more or less baseball leagues, you know, we form little teams together, like different clubs, and then we started playing like organized baseball and high school baseball.
What high school did you go to?
I went to, then it was the Thomas Jefferson High School in
okay.
Elizabeth. Yeah.
Okay. And you played for that, for
yeah.
your high school? Yeah? What
yes.
position did you play?
I used to play shortstop.
Okay. And how did you do in high school?
Well, my senior year, I was All-State. I did pretty good.
Sounds like it. How was your team? How was the school?
It was an all-boys school. So,
yeah.
you know, they had quite a, you know, an athletic program there. And I think we were state champions in, like, 1955. I think we won a, you know, Greater Newark tournament. We won Union County tournament, so, you know, we had a pretty good squad. I think off that team in 1955, I think there were four of us that signed professional contracts, you know, with the Detroit Tigers. There was a pitcher by the name of Richard Jones, an outfielder by the name of Jesse Queen, another infielder by the name of Bill Bennett. They all signed professional contracts, and, you know, I happened to be the only one that was fortunate enough, you know, to reach the level of the major leagues.
Okay. Do you know the name of the scout that signed you?
Irving K. Rabbit Jacobson.
Okay. He was obviously for Detroit.
He was a Detroit
okay.
scout.
Now, when did you get signed? Right out of high school, or did
no,
you go?
Rabbit, he encouraged me to go to college, and I went. 1955 to the middle of 1957, but my heart was just in, you know, like playing baseball.
The scout encouraged you to go to college, though?
He encouraged me to go to college.
Where did you go?
I went to Delaware State College in Dover, Delaware.
Okay.
Matter of fact, you know, he paid my, you know, tuition and everything to go, you know, with the insurance that, you know, if I decided, whenever I decided to play baseball, he would sign me to a contract. So, in the winter, January 1957, he signed me to my first professional contract. And, you know, to this day, you know, Rabbit has retired, you know, maybe about 20 years ago. And he's, you know, he lives in West Palm Beach, Florida, yet we still remain very, very close.
You can see why you would.
Yeah. We stay in contact, you know, quite naturally. I haven't seen him, but, you know, we write each other.
Mm-hmm. So you went to Delaware State. You stayed there how long?
A year and a half.
And you played for the team?
I played for the team.
And how'd you do that?
I hit over 400.
Wow, sounds like you did good. So then what happened?
And then I signed a professional contract in 1957, and my first assignment was in Erie, Pennsylvania.
What league is that?
That was in the New York Penn League at that particular time.
Yeah.
And then in 1958, I played in the Carolina League with Durham, and also with Idaho Falls in the Pioneer League. 1959, I played in the Fox Cities in the 3I League, and part of the season in the Sally League with Knoxville. In 1960, with the Denver Bears in the American Association.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, the first team that you played for again was Erie, Pennsylvania?
Erie, Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Now, by the time you made it to the Sally League, would you contrast the caliber of play? Is there a noticeable difference as you move up those two ends of the spectrum in the minors?
Oh, yeah. Every year was a learning experience, because, like, when you first start, you know, most of the guys are young, you know, just right out of high school. Mm-hmm. And the big difference, I guess, you know, like when you're in high school, the competition, the level of competition is, you know, like the teams that you face, you may face guys, you know, who are maybe one or two, maybe three guys, you know, who may have the potential of being, you know, like a professional baseball player. But then when you become a professional, you got to realize that, you know, like these guys are equal or better than you, because it's a combination of you know, talent, you know, young.
Top to bottom, you have good ball players, whereas in lower levels, you might have one, two.
One or two.
Right.
So then, and as you progress, you know, like up in the minor leagues, the higher you get, you know, the more experience, you know, you're facing.
Right. What are your memories of the minor league teams that you played on? People talk about the bus rides, the small ballparks, the
bad lights.
Yeah, among other things. Low pay.
Well, to me, you know, like, it was something that was quite enjoyable, because, you know, if you love the game, you know, initially when you first start, you know, that's all you want to do is just
get between the white lines and stop playing.
Play the game.
The other stuff is unimportant.
Unimportant.
Right?
You know, just play the game. And when you meet, you know, like, guys that are in the same shoes as you, like Dick McCullough, who played with the Tigers, you know, for a long period of time.
Right.
You know, he was on the first squad that in Erie, Pennsylvania.
Right.
And you develop, you know, just like friendships, you know, that just last for a lifetime.
Who were some of your other teammates in the minor leagues, and some of your managers? Do you recall any of your managers?
My first manager was a gentleman by the name of Charlie Criss, who was a first baseman, I think, in the Tigers organization. I think he played with the Cincinnati or Philadelphia. And Johnny Pesky, who was a shortstop for the Red Sox for quite a number of years. Al Lakeman, Charlie Metro, and basically, you know, those were, you know, the guys that were part of, you know, my development.
Right. Anybody you would single out as the one you learned the most from?
Well, you know,
or just a group of people, and you picked up a little from here, a little from there.
Yeah, you know, with the different personalities the different levels of, you know, that you play in, you know, you just pick up certain things mm-hmm. from each and every one of them, because, you know, as individuals, you know, they have different styles of managing. And, you know, you just...
Okay. Now, how'd you come up to the Tigers then, in 61? You started spring training with the Tigers in 61?
Yeah, well, in the winter of 1960, you know, I had a pretty good year. I hit, you know, over 300 in American Association.
That's with Denver.
With Denver.
Yeah.
Led the league in triples. And the Tigers, during the winter, traded their second baseman, who was Frank Bowling at the time.
Traded to Milwaukee, didn't they?
To Milwaukee, right. For a center fielder by the name of Billy Bruton. So there was an opportunity. I went to spring training, and they had also acquired a second baseman named Chuck Cottier from the Milwaukee organization. And, you know, during the spring, I had the opportunity, you know, to start off spring training, you know, with Detroit, and I had a marvelous, you know, spring training, and I started the season, you know, in Detroit in 61. I think, you know, like the squad that we had, I mean, you know, was, I think we won over 100.
I believe it was 103.
Yeah, 103.
Let me ask you about 1961. You're obviously excited. You're a rookie in the bigs. You have a pretty good rookie year. I know you led the league in triples. Do you recall that?
Yeah.
You have 14 triples, 30 stolen bases. And it's nice, right? You're on a good team. Well, of course, the Yankees steamrolled the American League that year. You remember your first ball game in the majors?
Yeah, it was quite memorable to me because I hit a home run.
In your first game?
The first game.
First at bat or no?
I think it was the fourth at bat. Off Jim Perry from the Cleveland Indians.
Where? In Detroit?
In Detroit, you know, in the upper deck. So
wow, okay. That's obviously memorable.
Yeah.
Do you recall your first game in New York? Did your family come and see you play and all that?
Yeah, I think some organization had given a bus ride, you know, to honor the fact, you know, that, you know, someone from Elizabeth was playing in the big leagues, and my mother and father, you know, was in attendance, you know, that game, and, you know, quite a number of my relatives and friends. And
friends that you hadn't seen in a long, long time, right?
Yeah, you know, guys, you know, that I grew up with.
Right.
So it was, you know, quite an event. You know, I can't recall, you know, whether, you know, we won or we lost, but, you know, I know it was exciting.
1961 goes along nicely for you. As I said, you led the league in triples, 30 stolen bases. You bat pretty well, I believe like 270, something to that effect. I think you've had a couple of votes for Rookie of the Year. I believe it was won by a guy named Don Schwall, I think,
right.
In 61.
Pitcher from
Boston.
Right.
The Tigers were in the race until, I think, sometime in September, despite the fact that the Yankees were such a great team.
Yeah.
The Tigers were in the pennant race, so you had it all at once.
Right. I think in the early part of September, we went to Yankee Stadium about a game and a half out of first place. And as I recall, you know, I think the Yankees, you know, swept us in New York, and then we went to Baltimore, and then went to Boston, and by the time, you know, like the dust cleared, I think we were eight games.
Yankees didn't lose.
Yeah.
So the year ends pretty nicely. You're second place team, over 100 games. So you stuck in 62, I'm sure you're juiced up, ready to go again, right?
Yeah, but, you know, like they say, the sophomore jinx or whatever, you know, it just seemed like that particular year was a, you know, difficult one for me because, you know, it just seems things just didn't, you know, fall into place. Although, you know, we had a relatively good team, and I don't know, just things just didn't gel.
Didn't work as well as it did in 61.
In 61.
Yeah. You still didn't have a real bad year. As I recall, your batting average was down, but you still stole like 18 bases. You still had a fairly good year, and you played the majority of games at second for Detroit, right?
Yeah. One of them years, when I was a lot younger, I could run. And I think that was one of my biggest assets, my speed and, enjoying the game itself. And I think, just like over the course of, when you're growing up and you play baseball, maybe two or three times a week, it's fun, but, just like when you do it 162 times, you really have to, love it, although there's a lot of, peaks and valleys. And when you were in the big leagues, they may say it's a sport, but, it's also, business.
Right.
And, the pressures, that are on baseball players, although, it's still an enjoyment. I think the business aspect sometimes, just overwhelms, some of the players.
Right, I'm sure it does. What was the, do you know what the minimum pay was back then?
I think the minimum pay then was like $7,500.
That's probably what you got in 61, right?
Yeah.
After a rookie year like that, did you have trouble getting a raise?
Nah, it wasn't much of a raise, but it was...
Get a raise.
But it was a raise. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you get an award for, or any kind of recognition for the lead in the league in triples? Do you get anything at all? Nothing?
Nah.
They give you nothing, huh?
Nah.
Okay. After 62, your playing time declined a few years after that.
Yeah, well, I got injured and I tore the tendons in my finger in 63. And I think the Tigers had acquired, a veteran second baseman, by the name of Jerry Lumpy.
Right.
From Kansas City. So, he played, majority of the games at second base, and I think, then from 63 on, I played, various positions,
right.
Second base, a little bit of, this and a little bit of that.
Mm-hmm. Which did you prefer to play? Did you like second?
Second base.
Like second.
Yeah.
Okay. By 67, I think your time is... with the Tigers, your playing time decreased, even after your injury. Was it your injury, or it's just that they felt Lumpy was better? And you mentioned Dick McAuliffe before. I know he eventually made the Tigers by 67, I would suspect, right?
No, I think Dick was with us prior to that, but he used to play shortstop.
Shortstop, right,
yeah.
He did play short.
And a little bit of, third base. And... in 67, they sent me down to the minor leagues to their farm club in Toledo. And from then, I went to the Cincinnati Reds. So that particular, McAuliffe, started playing, like regular second base, because I think he was the second baseman in 68.
Yeah.
When they won,
everything.
The World Series.
Yeah. Right. You went to the minors, and then from the minors went to Cincinnati?
Yes.
Okay. By this time, I suspect, were you looking forward to going to Cincinnati? Or how did you feel about that?
Not. My old manager, the reason that I got, to Cincinnati, Charlie Metro, who was my manager in Denver, was instrumental in me going to Cincinnati, because I think he was a scout for the Cincinnati Reds, and I think, one of the infielders, I think Leo Cardenas, was injured, like that particular time, and I, so I became a member, of the Cincinnati Reds by, a minor trade or whatever. I stayed with them, for couple months, And then I got back in the Detroit Tiger organization. And now I went to 1968. I went in the Cleveland Indian organization because I played at Portland in their Triple-A club.
At the PCL?
Yeah, Pacific Coast League.
Right.
And that's where I tore the tendons in my wrist. I tried to play in 1969. I played with the Tigers, Double-A baseball club in Montgomery, Alabama. And, you know, by then, you know, being able not to, you know, do some of the things, you know, that you're used to doing, even though I was young, heck, I was only like 30 or 31 years old, you know,
Actually would be in, almost considered in your prime.
Right, you know.
But injuries took their toll, and now you're in Double-A, so that must have been a real step down, huh?
Yeah, you know, back on those bus rides, you know, from, where I originally started. And, you know, like after the taste of, you know, 7 years in the big league, you know. Yeah,
big difference.
Big difference, you know. Plus I had, you know, like a wife and two children.
Right.
So instead of, you know, my career, you know, spiraling upward, you know, it was going downward. So, you know, I just got out.
So you got out from Double-A with Cleveland? Is that what you're saying?
Detroit.
All right. Last thing you said was you were with Portland.
Right. That was then, in 1968.
Right. And in 69, you were back in Detroit's organization?
Right. In Montgomery.
Oh, Montgomery. You said that. Yeah. So you finished the season with Montgomery? Or?
I finished the season with Montgomery, and I called it quits.
Packed it in.
Right.
Did you stay active in the game at all, coaching or any other facet of it?
Not on a professional level. You know, I still, you know, tinkered around, you know, playing softball, you know. But, just, you know, various softball leagues, you know, slow pitch. But not on, you know, not any baseball.
Okay. Let me ask you about a couple of major league managers. Your first manager was Bob Sheffing. You got anything you could share about Bob Sheffing?
What do I remember?
Well, you come up with him, so.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, yeah, I have to have a fondness, you know, for, you know, like the first manager, you know, that, that, you know, showed some confidence in me as being, you know, like a rookie. And then, you know, have confidence, enough confidence in me to have me play 162 games, you know. So, you know, hey, listen. Special place in my heart, you know,
right,
for Bob Sheffing.
How would you describe him as a manager? Was he quiet? Was he talkative? Was he
not quiet, you know, sort of manager? You know, he let you play the game.
Yeah.
You know, there was only, you know, like two rookies on that 61 team. You know, myself and Steve Boras, you know, third baseman. So the rest of the guys, you know, there was quite a blend of guys who, you know, been in the game for quite a while. You know, Norm Cash, and
right,
Chico Fernandez, and Rocky Colavito, Billy Booten, Don Mossey, and Frank Larry, Jim Bunning, you know, Hank Aguirre.
Right.
I think catching, we had Gus Triando. So, you know, most of the time, you know, and we had a very, very successful year, so, you know.
Yeah, so it was pretty good. Winning 100 games, it's pretty nice.
Filling out the line of cards,
yeah. How about contrast him with Charlie Dressen?
Charlie Dressen was still, you know, fiery, you know, type of manager, you know. He still, I guess, was reminiscent of the old Dodger.
Of 51 he was reminiscent of.
Yeah, you know, or the old Dodger days, you know, so I guess he tried to bring a little of that, you know, to Detroit. But, you know, I guess, you know, we had different types, you know, personalities, you know.
Mm-hmm. Was Sheffing fired, and that's how Dressen came to manager? He came in 63.
in between Bob Sheffing, I think we had...
We had also, later on...
Mayo Smith.
Mayo Smith you had in 67.
Oh, that was Mayo. I thought it was in between.
Yeah. Well, you had Bob Swift and Frank Skaff in 66 after Drissen.
Drissen.
After Drissen
passed
left.
Away, yeah.
Oh, he passed away. All right. Okay. Do you remember Bob Swift or Frank Skaff? Do you remember either of those guys?
Yeah. Well, see, they were part of my minor league experience. So, you know...
Oh, so you knew them already?
I knew them already, you know, because, you know, like growing up in the minor leagues, there was, you know, Bob Swift. Frank Skaff was a minor league manager. Guys like Wayne Blackburn, you know, Stubby Overmeyer, you know, so I grew up with these guys. So like when I became a member of the major league club and they were, you know, like coaches, it was just like, you know, like part of the family. The only guys, you know, who were, you know, that I was unfamiliar with, you know, like, that level was like Don Heffner, who was our first base coach, and George Myatt, you know, because they came, I guess, from another, you know, organization, you know, to Detroit. But, you know, like I said, the other ones, you know, I just grew up with them.
Okay, how about Mayo Smith? Do you remember him much?
Yeah, I recall Mayo. He brought a lot of, you know, a different type of experience, you know, to Detroit, because I think, you know, he had managed, you know, quite a number of years, you know, before he had gotten there, you know, and all of them, you know, they have a uniqueness as far as, you know, their styles are concerned. I guess that's why they make changes, you know, because of the, you know, different styles.
Let me ask you, in 68, when the Tigers won the World Championship, did you have any thoughts about it, the fact that you might have been on that team? Did that enter your mind, thinking that if you had, no?
You know, you feel good, you know, about, for the guys, you know.
Your teammates,
yeah.
Right.
Because, you know, like, to me, I mean, there's no better fraternity than, you know, like baseball players. So, you know, regardless of you're there or you're not there, you know, you just, you know, you wish them well.
Right. And ask you about a few of your teammates, okay? Mm-hmm. Give me some memories or stories or thoughts or reflections. You mentioned the late Norm Cash, who led the league in hitting 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
He was a good ball player.
Mm-hmm.
Died, unfortunately, a young man. What do you remember about Norm Cash?
A jokester. You know, one of them guys, him and Frank Larry, you know, likes to pull a lot of practical jokes, you know, like on different, you know, like different guys.
Did he get on rookies?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
You know, that was, you know,
a standard, right?
A normal thing.
Yeah.
You know, that,
rookies, you know, always got through some...
you know, some sort of mild harassment, you know, but it was all done in, you know,
in
good
fun.
Nature. Yeah.
Yeah, so he was a joke, a practical joke. Huh?
Yeah.
How about Rocky Colavito, big slugger?
Yeah, Rocky...
Grew up in New York.
Yeah. A gentleman, you know, but on the baseball field, you know, very intense.
Yeah.
You know, fiery. Mm-hmm. You know, always gave, 110%.
Could hit the ball a long way.
Yeah.
You know, good arm, too.
Yeah. Very nice man. You know, Al Kaline, you know, very quiet, you know, but, you know, intense, you know, like in his, you know, professional out there on that baseball field, you know, professional.
Completely, as they say today, the big word is focused, I guess,
yeah,
is the word you're looking for, right?
Right.
How about Billy Bruton? Came over from the Braves, I believe. The center fielder, I think?
Yeah, that was my roommate.
Yeah?
Yeah. We roomed together, you know, for about 3 years, I imagine, until I think he retired in 64, 65. So
you got close to Billy Bruton.
Right, you know, when you room with someone, you know, it's just like, and you become, you know their wives and their children.
Right, right.
So there's a connection there, you know, that, you know, even I think about 3 or 4 years ago, you know, he called me and, you know, I got a chance to go down to visit him in Wilmington, Delaware. So, you know, there's relationships, you know, that are developed, like I said before, that last a lifetime.
How about Denny McLain? He was there at the end of your tenure with the Tigers. Do you recall Denny?
Yep, he was there. That was one of my card-playing partners. You know, I think it was a group of us just used to love to play pinochle. Gage Brown, you know, Denny McLain, and Ray Oiler. That was, you know, our pastime, you know, like as far as when we used to travel, you know, like on the planes, and like we used to go back in the hotel playing, you know, pinochle.
Yeah.
Laughing and, you know, ribbing each other, you know, in a good natured way. Mm-hmm.
Was it obvious that Denny was going to be a good pitcher in those early days? Did you see that in him?
Oh, yeah, you know, he was, he didn't like, you know, like any confidence. In himself, you know, and that's what I remember most about him. You know,
very confident.
Very, very.
Cocky,
very,
almost.
Cocky.
Yeah. How about Frank Larry, the Yankee killer, he was called?
Yeah. He was very, you know, like an aggressive type of pitcher, you know, who was, you know, when he went out on the mound, you knew he was there. I think the first year, I think he won 23 games for the Tigers. And, you know, like, he was the type of pitcher, you know, like, all you had to do was just give him the ball. And, you know, you never worried about, you know, how far he was going. You know, he was out there for the duration, you know, and he would give you 150%. Guys like him, Jim Bunning, you know, like Mickey Lolich. You know,
tough competitors.
Tough competitors, yeah.
Yeah. How about Mickey Lolich, hero of the 68 series? Was he one of those guys who was intense too?
Yeah.
Focused and all that kind of thing?
Yeah. Mickey was not, I'll say, you know, like a quiet, you know, like intenseness, you know, like on the mound. You know, some guys are intense, you know, but they're vocal, you know, about it, you know, and I think he was, you know, like one of those non-vocal guys, you know, who was very, you know, intense.
I'm going to ask you back about Frank Larry. I called him the Yankee killer before when I mentioned his name. Was he aware of the fact that he beat the Yankees a lot? Was that ever talked about by either him or any of your teammates, or...
No.
No? Because he had an amazing record against the Yankees. Yeah. I was just curious about if he...
I never heard him, you know, mention it.
No?
You know, but I guess, you know, just like newspapers and writers and things, you know, they write about, you know, certain things. But, mm-hmm. you know, you never, you know, that's the beauty about the game of baseball, you know, regardless of what's on paper. You got to play the game.
True. What about Willie Horton? He come up, I guess, as you were maybe your last year or so with the Tigers, didn't he, Willie Horton?
I think he came up in about 65, I think. So, you know, he was quite, you know, young.
Right.
And I think the first time he came up, you know, they sent him back down, you know, like, to the minors, you know, like after maybe, you know, like a couple months, because I guess sometimes, you know, guys who are expected, you know, to produce big numbers, sometimes, you know, they add a little extra pressure, you know, on themselves, and I think that's what initially, you know, like happened to Willie. And sometimes, you know, just like, I guess, doing anything, you know, you just have to let, you know, nature take its course and not try to, you know, do things that you're not capable of doing, you know, not that he wasn't capable of doing, you know, what he did, but, you know, you just have to, you know, learn how to relax and do it.
Mm-hmm. And the talent will come up. Right. Well, he was certainly a good ball player. How about Jim Bunning? What type of a guy was Jim Bunning? Anything you remember about him?
Yeah, another
Could you have seen him at that time being a congressman? Could that have?
No. I mean, he was an intelligent individual. I never pictured him like being in politics, but he was a very, like I said, very intelligent individual who was, the ultimate professional, out there on the mound. And I think, his record speaks for itself. I think he won, over 100 games in each league.
Yeah.
So, he was a durable guy who gave, all he had, once he walked across those white lines.
Billy Bruton, your closest friend on the Tigers then, would you say?
Yeah, in my earlier years, and then after he retired, I think, I started rooming with Gates Brown, and I think...
Right, pinch hitter extraordinaire.
Right.
What kind of a guy was Gates?
Gates, type of guy, from his background, if you didn't know him, he seemed, sort of rough, but... once you got to know him, he would give you, the shirt off, your back, and we did become, quite close. And I think, after I had retired and left the game, he was a member of the coaching staff, with the Tigers. And, when the Tigers used to come into town and when they used to go to Baltimore, I used to visit, I missed that,
Yeah.
But then after he, his tour with the Tigers was over, there was nobody left, as far as, a closeness.
Right. Your time with the Reds, you didn't have a real long, you only had a short period of time with them. Mm-hmm. Did you get to know any of your Reds teammates I know they had Pete Rose and Johnny Bench and Tony Perez and Lee May. And
Beta Pinson,
Alex Johnson.
No, I don't think Alex Johnson was there at that particular time. But, quite naturally, when you go to another organization and, you don't have the same type of relationships, that you have, you've established over, 5 or 10 years with someone else, but, it's still, the game of baseball, and you still, the object is, to win the game, with 25 guys,
Right.
So, that's always, an established fact, some guys, you become close to, some you don't, but,
right.
Your object is, to win.
Right. The guys at Cincinnati, though, so then you didn't get to know too well because you were a new guy.
Yeah, but I mean, you still
knew them.
You know them,
not well.
Yeah, not well. I mean, like some of the guys, I think the closest one on that team that I became close to was like Floyd Robinson, because he had come from the White Sox, so I knew him.
Oh, I see.
Because we played against one another.
Right, you're going to a different league.
Yeah, so I guess that him going to another league and I going to another league, but we're familiar with each other.
Right, you so played against each other, like you said. Okay, you said how you finally came to an end. What's your feeling about the game of baseball today? Do you follow it? And what's your opinion of it? You watch a lot of games? Follow closely?
Not closely, because, I don't know, growing up and relating to a team, I told you I was a Dodger fan, and back then, the teams are basically, the same, year in and year out. Now, I guess, with the free agent rule, guys, you know, like, move around a lot, you know, so it's, you know, it's kind of difficult for me to say, you know, I would be a Dodger fan and, you know, Duke Snyder's playing with the, you know, the Yankees the next year, or Pee Wee Reese's with the, you know, the Giants, you know,
Yeah.
So it's difficult.
It's transient.
It's difficult for me right now to say I'm a, you know, I am a baseball fan.
Right, not of one team, though. I understand that. But what's your opinion about the state of the game now? How do you view it compared to when you played? Do you think the caliber of play is better? Do you think it's worse?
I won't say, you know, like it's worse. They are, you know, tremendous ball players. I think sometimes, you know, the more, you know, you add on to a product, I won't say, you know, that the quality, you know, dilutes itself, but, you know, I think, you know, like the game, when it comes to, like, the facet, you know, like pitching, for an example, you know, how many, you know, major league quality pitches, you know, can you have, you know, like if you keep, you know, adding on to, you know,
adding team expansion.
You keep expanding. But, you know, I think, you know, some of the ball players, the majority of them, like, just playing, like, right now are tremendous ball players, you know, because, hey, I think they're bigger, you know, stronger. I don't know what they're eating, but, faster, because, you know, their record, you know, speaks for itself.
Yeah. Do you think the game is, you mentioned the business aspect before. That seems to make the front page now as much as the results of the games. Is that the same now as it was back when you played, or do you think that the business aspect now is getting more of the headlines in between the lines?
I think it's getting, you know, more, you know, like now, because, you know, like right now, you're like during the off season, you know, like all you read is, you know, how teams are going to make adjustments, you know, not due to the fact, you know, like of talent, because of, you know, salary structure, you know, and you can see it, you know, like even during the course of a year, you know, just like when teams are not doing as well as I guess they projected, you know, and the guys.
A big consideration is how much they're making, so you got to move guys around, get guys out, and get guys in, and that kind of thing.
It used to be. You know, when you looked at a player, you know, and the, you know, contributions that he's making now, it looks like, you know, you look at a guy, you know, instead when he reaches a certain salary level, instead of, you know, becoming an asset, you know, he becomes a detriment.
I guess so. You said you were a Dodger fan. Did you ever get to meet any of the Brooklyn Dodgers that you told me you used to watch as a kid?
Oh, yeah. Carl Erskine. Johnny Podgers, you know, he became a teammate of mine my first year in spring training. Gil Hodges, you know, because he was the manager of the Washington Senators. Duke Snyder, I think, was an original member of the Mets. Joe Black, even though, you know, he was not, you know, involved in baseball, but he was, you know, active.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was a vice president of Greyhound, you know, so, you know, to my traveling, you know, I met him. And Roy Campanella, you know, I think he was, you know, visited, you know, some of the spring training camps, and you know, like during the off season, you know, like when they have baseball, you know, dinners,
yeah.
that you, you know, that I get an opportunity to attend. You know, I met some of those gentlemen. So, you know, growing up and seeing these guys and perform, and then having the opportunity, you know, to perform, you know, with them and against them, you know, was, you know, quite a thrill.
Yeah, I bet it was.
For me.
Last thing on last year is what you recall about Tiger Stadium. Was it your favorite place to play? If it wasn't, what was your favorite ballpark to play in?
Always have, you know, an affection, you know, for home.
Right.
You know.
Any other parks you liked particularly?
I don't know. I just seem to do quite well, you know, in Comiskey Park, you know, mm-hmm. Chicago. I mean, although, you know, they had pretty good teams, you know, it just seemed like the ball was just bigger to me. Kansas City ballparks, you know, were always well manicured. Fenway Park, you know, was a favorite. Yankee Stadium, you know, with its history, you know,
right.
was just awesome, you know, going there. You know, just the idea, you know, that a lifelong, you know, boyhood dream became a reality was, you know, when you walk out on the field, you know, whether it be Municipal Stadium in Cleveland or Fenway Park in Boston or Comiskey Park or Wrigley Field, you know, in the old Los Angeles, you know, area. It was, you know, quite a thrill.
Not that much. If you have nothing else to